Welcome, investors, to the Absolute Return Podcast, your source for stock market analysis, global macro musings, and hedge fund investment strategies. Your hosts, Julian Klimochko and Michael Kesslering, aim to bring you the knowledge and analysis you need to become a more intelligent and wealthier investor. This episode is brought to you by Accelerate Financial Technologies. Accelerate, because performance matters. Find out more at accelerateshares.com.
Welcome, podcast listeners, to the Absolute Return Podcast. I'm your host, Julian Klimochko. I'm here with my co-host, Mike Kesslering. And on today's podcast, we welcome special guest, Andrew Pascal, founder, chairman, and CEO of Play Studios, an award-winning developer of free-to-play casual games for mobile and social platforms that offer real-world rewards to loyal players. Play Studios recently announced a going public transaction through SPAC, Akiya's acquisition, in a $1.1 billion deal. On the podcast today, Andrew discusses what attracted him to the gaming business and why he spent his career in the gaming sector, his formula for entrepreneurship, and advice to those considering going out on their own, background and insights on the merger with SPAC, Akiya's acquisition, key growth initiatives for Play Studios, why investors should consider Play Studios stock, and more. So with no further ado, please enjoy our podcast with Andrew Pascal, founder, chairman, and CEO of Play Studios. Welcome, Andrew, to the Absolute Return Podcast. Super excited to have you on the show today. Obviously, a lot going on with Play Studios and the recently announced going public transaction. Must be super exciting times. But before we get into that, I wanted to delve a bit into your background and how you got to where you are. Specifically, your career, you've been long involved and focused on the gaming business, starting out in 1994 as founder and CEO of Silicon Gaming, then founder and CEO of WagerWorks, followed by president and COO of Wynn Las Vegas. What attracted you to the gaming business such that you spend your entire career in it?
Yeah, thanks, Julian. It's a pleasure to be here. I appreciate having the opportunity to talk a little bit about my background and just where we're headed with Play Studios. To answer your question, my career in the gaming industry actually started when I was in college. I had an opportunity to come and act as an intern for the two summers that preceded my graduating. And so I was working for a small downtown casino called the Golden Nugget. And this is, in the 80s, mid-80s, I'm dating myself. And so it was fascinating to me because what I recognized pretty early on is that these gaming properties were integrated resorts, that they had, within one enterprise, all of these different leisure businesses, whether it was hospitality with hotels and restaurants or the content of the industry, the games that people were playing, entertainment. So it was just fascinating to me. And I had an opportunity over the course of those few summers to really get pretty broad exposure to the way one of these resorts works. And so when I got out of school, I was extended an opportunity to come and work for that same company full time. And it preceded the launch or the opening of that company's newest resort, which was being built on the Strip. And this is now the late 80s, which was the Mirage. And what you might know is the Mirage was really the catalyst that brought about this whole renaissance in Las Vegas and the kind of reinvention of what Las Vegas is to the modern day flavor version of it. And so it was fascinating to me as I grew up within kind of the industry and experienced firsthand this evolution of this market. One of the things that I recognized was that so much creativity and energy was being spent on building these really fanciful resorts, but yet the content of them really wasn't evolving that much, that being the games that people were playing. And so back then, most of the slot machines were still these analog, physical, real machines. And I just felt like there was an opportunity to really apply the same kind of creativity and innovative thinking to the core content of the industry. So I went home. I grew up in the Bay Area in San Francisco. I went home and teamed up with a really accomplished collection of technologists and entrepreneurs, serial entrepreneurs, and went through the cycle of tapping the technology community up there and creative community and reinventing the slot machine experience. And so when you look at today's slot machines, they're all video-based, very rich, deep experiences with high production values and networks. So you can have shared outcomes and competitive and group play. All of those things were really ideas that we advanced way back then and had to actually change not only the underlying technology that was enabling these experiences, but the regulatory framework and all the statutes around how they would be ultimately evaluated and embraced by the industry. So we did all that. It was really cool. That was our first company that we founded. And we took that public in the mid-90s, and it was ultimately acquired by the then market leader, a company called IGT. And as I alluded to, I mean, a lot of that technology, and certainly, you know, what we were trying to achieve with the experience is what exists today. It's the state of the market today. So that's kind of how I started and why it is that I ultimately, you know, chose to focus on the core content of the industry. When we sold that company to IGT, we had been incubating internally another business effort, which was to exploit all of our technology and content in this new emerging channel, which was the internet. And what we acknowledged was that there were a lot of really early entrants exploiting gambling games and gambling content on the internet, but for the most part, unregulated. And so given that we were serving the more traditional regulated industry, what we could feel and sense was this growing frustration among the existing companies around their inability to tap into and exploit this market opportunity. And so we said, well, let's see if we can't provide them with a solution. And so we set off to be the credible kind of provider of the platforms and content and tools that would enable these really well-established companies and brands to get into that industry. And so we teamed up with companies like Sky and Virgin and Rank Organization and Paddy Power out of Ireland and Blue Square and MGM Resorts here domestically and helped enable them tap into that market. That company also was acquired by IGT. So we effectively sold them the same company twice in the span of, you know, several years. And it was at that point that the gentleman that I'd worked for previously, Steve Wynn, had sold his company, Mirage Resorts, to the MGM Group and decided that he was going to start over and build what became, well, what is Wynn Resorts. And so I had an opportunity to come back and be a part of that effort. So I started off doing some business development work over in Europe, but ultimately really focusing on the flagship resort that we were building here in Las Vegas and took it through the whole cycle of its pre-development and construction and then the logistics of actually launching a resort of that complexity. And I was in a corporate role really lending support to the dedicated team that was responsible for the operations of that property. And then soon after we opened, I ultimately was asked to assume the role of the chief operating officer and then the president. And so I was in that capacity for the better part of 5 years until I chose to transition out. And so that was an amazing experience, as you might imagine. You know, we went through not only, you know, launching that property, which our ambition was to, again, redefine what the experience was all about here in Las Vegas. And we accomplished a whole bunch of things that have never been done before. Most importantly or notably, it was the most decorated resort on the planet. We achieved the 5 red pavilions from Michelin, 5 stars and 5 diamonds. And so it really kind of signaled to the market that even at scale, you could build, develop, and deliver a leisure experience with just very nuanced and high level of service. We extended and grew the property with the opening of Encore. And that was right into the teeth of the recession. So Encore opened up in 2008. And so was there through the experience of, you know, just stabilizing the company and positioning it for emerging from the recession and ultimately thriving. And it was in late 2010 that my former colleagues from my first two startups started to, poke me in and around this emerging opportunity on Facebook, that Facebook clearly had emerged as this incredible platform that was just achieving kind of geometric growth, and that one of the core applications that was driving that growth were games, these social games that people were playing. And they felt that, you know, gambling games as a category would soon find its way into that channel. We all deeply believe that. And they're like, look, this is the opportunity that, you know, we've been gearing up for the better part of our, you know, 15, 20 year careers. And so I transitioned out of Wynn, kind of decompressed and regrouped for a bit, and then started to really look more seriously at that market opportunity. And it was super exciting. I remember that we went and attended the Game Developers Conference in San Francisco just to kind of get re-engaged with the community of developers and understand the state of the market. And we're just so completely stimulated by everything that we were learning. And it was incredibly validating. We just felt so clearly that this was going to be a massive opportunity. And we also met a few people at that conference that shared a passion for our genre, the free-to-play casino genre. And they too had similar backgrounds, having built and developed kind of casino products. And we decided that we would team up. And so with feeling like, okay, well, we have all of the core kind of experience and disciplines as a founding group now to go and exploit this opportunity, I felt like we needed to make sure that our overall approach was totally unique and differentiated from anything that someone might bring into the market, understanding it was going to be intensely competitive, and that ideally we could establish a position for ourselves that was defensible, that there were some big game, social game companies, that the minute you got traction with a new emerging product or a category of games, they'd either come in to try and buy you or they would replicate your offering and just try to overwhelm you. And so with that as kind of a dynamic that really helped shape our thinking, we came up with the idea of really extending the experience of Las Vegas first onto Facebook and then ultimately onto mobile devices. And so extending it onto Facebook really meant not just porting games, pool games of chance that you can engage with and play slot games and blackjack, you know, on Facebook, but we wanted to extend the experience. We wanted to leverage these big iconic brands. And we wanted to bring this whole dimension of real world value to the experience. This whole notion of, you know, yes, you can play for free, but as you engage with the products and demonstrate your loyalty, we wanted the experience to get richer, deeper, and to actually reward people. And so that's what guided our initial thinking. And, you know, I tell people that I really think of Las Vegas as the world's first social game experience. You know, people come here and they convert real world money into this abstracted currency that they then go use to engage and play. And as they engage and play ever more deeply, this world of services and benefits reveals itself to you that many people aren't even aware of. And so the more you play and the more deeply or the more loyal you are to a particular casino resort, the ever more refined the experience becomes. So we had obviously deep experience in delivering on that promise. In the real world, we said, let's go do that virtually. And so I had a long history with a gentleman named Jim Urin, who was the then chairman and CEO of MGM Resorts, and happened to also be a neighbor of mine. And we went on a hike together and he said, so what's next? And I said, look, I don't want to mix business and pleasure. If you're curious, I'll come sit down with you, set up a meeting. And I remember distinctly sitting in his office and called in another longtime colleague and friend, a gentleman named Bill Hornbuckle. And I just kind of pitched the idea of, you know, doing this extension of Las Vegas onto this new platform and delivering on the promise of play for free and earn for real. And they were like, we love it. We're in. And that was really the genesis of what has now become Play Studios. So maybe that's a bit more long-winded of an answer, but that's kind of the arc of my career and how it is that, you know, Play Studio, we got focused on Play Studio specifically, and it's been an amazing 8 or 9 years since we founded that company in terms of our growth and how well positioned we feel we are now to really more fully exploit this model that is just totally unique to us.
And now, a word from our sponsor, Accelerate, one of Canada's most innovative and fastest-growing alternative investment solution providers, with a suite of institutional-caliber alternative ETFs for investors seeking diversification and long-term performance. The Accelerate Arbitrage Fund, symbol ARB on the TSX, is the world's first SPAC-focused ETF, with a diversified portfolio of SPAC and merger arbitrage opportunities in an easy-to-use, low-cost ETF. The Accelerate Arbitrage Fund ETF trades under the symbol ARB on the Toronto Stock Exchange. Find out more at accelerateshares.com.
No, and I think adding the full context of your progression, and then as well as the progression of Play Studios, really adds a lot of context to the story that you're telling. Right? Is when you've obviously been a multi-time founder. When you're looking at a new company, a new business line, anything in that general area, how do you go about that? You've talked about some of your network, how ideas may come about and how important the network that you have, but as well some of the on the product side, the defensibility, having moats within a product or business. How formulaic is it, and how much of it is, I guess, fitting to the world to how it currently is, kind of with a formula, as opposed to looking out into the future and how the gaming community is going to engage?
I don't think there's a formula specifically. There are very definitely key questions that you need to ask yourself and answer and move through, so you can get to a place where you have very deep conviction in your idea for your business. And so it starts with really understanding what is the market opportunity. And so is there an existing market that is of significant scale where the consumers are being underserved, or there's an unexploited opportunity within that market that you think you can now go capitalize on? Or the alternative is that there's a new emerging market that you just deeply believe in. And so you want to take advantage of the inherent kind of growth profile of an emerging market, but you then also feel like there's an approach that you can take that will be distinctive, unique to you, and ideally defensible over time. So it's first really qualifying what is the market opportunity and the market dynamics. In both those cases, I alluded to either an unexploited opportunity or crafting a solution that's really unique and defensible. To me, that's the second order question, which is, okay, I believe in this market opportunity. How can we approach it and leverage our experience and our collection of resources and network of people to craft a solution that is really unique and not just different for the sake of being different, but like we can create a very unique position for ourselves that will be valued by that consumer and the basis for building an enduring business. So once you can answer that question, then it's about, all right, well, let's assess the inherent complexity of delivering on that idea, which means that you got to give it a bit more form and shape. You got to have all the right people come together to really ask those critical questions, objectively ask those critical questions and break down and really understand what's the resource planning look like? How long is it going to take? What are the core and key disciplines that you need to go invest in and build so that you can then go fully execute on that as an opportunity? And then it's about attracting the right team, people that just have a deep passion for whatever their discipline is and a deep belief in the vision for the company. And both, in our view, are critically important. It's not just about, I love the opportunity, let's go exploit the opportunity so that we can enjoy the commercial benefits. Like getting to a place where you really build something exceptional means that you have to have people that are certainly talented, but they're really committed to working very hard and practicing their craft, really, you know, contributing to something that is just exceptionally well executed. And so, look, that philosophically is deeply rooted in my upbringing in the more leisure and hospitality industries. It's like, you know, the challenge is really being so committed to all of the details. Everything matters, being unrelenting about just getting every aspect of the experience right and fully realizing its potential. And anything short of that, sure, you can be opportunistic and go create value. But my belief is that long-term enduring value, building brands, whether that's the intrinsic value of a company or whether it's the specific equity that you're cultivating within a product as a brand, it comes from just being deeply committed to executing to the highest level. And that's not just being talented, it's outworking everybody else. And so market opportunity, unique solution that informs a vision that then attracts the right complement of people that are incredibly skilled and hardworking and that then commit themselves to going and building that product or that service that ultimately drives the business. So, you know, if that as a framework is a formula, well, then I guess maybe it is formulaic. If instead it's just about like these are fundamental questions and there's obviously unlimited answers in each case, well, then, you know, that's my discipline in the way that I think about and approach new opportunities.
Great. Thank you for that advice on others considering entrepreneurship and the formulaic nature of it. And one formula that you seem to have figured out, Andrew, is the forming of businesses and then taking them public. So certainly exciting times for Play Studios. As you recently announced a going public transaction on February 1st through a special purpose acquisition company in a $1.1 billion deal. So super exciting times, a massive leap forward for Play Studios. We're wondering, how did that deal come about specifically? Were you seeking to go public or was it more opportunistic based off inbound interest?
No, it was more of a deliberate decision. You know, I would say in the late summer, I started to get educated about the different ways for us to ultimately position the company to accelerate its growth. You know, for 9 years, we've enjoyed really healthy growth. It's all been organic. We've assembled every team, we've built every product, we've acquired all of our players, and we've serviced and supported them in order to drive the growth of our business. We recognize and acknowledge that what we have built is a really remarkable platform. Our loyalty program, we've abstracted as a solution into a core set of technologies and features and tools and key disciplines that allow us to deliver on the promise of a full-featured loyalty program within our products. We now want to apply that strategic asset and focus it on driving the growth of more products, some of our own design. But we also feel like we're incredibly well positioned to now go and acquire existing portfolios of games and networks of players and integrate them into our framework and drive growth. And so in order to do that and execute on that strategy, you need currencies. And so I could either have gone and done private transaction and kind of cashed up, but I wouldn't have the same flexibility because I wouldn't be able to use my equity as a liquid currency if that seemed called for. So I started to explore the various alternatives to becoming public and where we are. And, you know, very early in that cycle, got exposed to what was happening in the world of SPACs and how SPACs as a vehicle had become a very credible and legitimate path to becoming public. And the more I learned, the more it seemed to align with us and what we were trying to achieve. And that being that we have a business that's really unique and nuanced. And to be able to, under the construct of a merger, sit down with prospective investors and really talk about the business far more deeply and share and look at kind of forecasts for how we expect the business to evolve, it means that people can more deeply understand the company as they make their own decisions about investing in it. They'll understand kind of the arc that we're on and how we expect that it's going to grow. And so the more I started looking at SPACs as an alternative, the more clear it became to me that this was really a very compelling path for us. So then I said, all right, well, I want to understand what are the predicates to becoming like or achieving a really great SPAC outcome. And I started looking at how can I position the company so that we're an incredibly attractive target or partner to a SPAC, because I wanted to ultimately have leverage as I engaged with a number of them and optimized for the right outcome. And so I learned that, you know, I needed to make sure that the company's financial standing and financial hygiene was in top order. So we put in place and had already audited financial statements for the prior 3 years, but we made them PCAOB compliant. So they were SEC compliant. We looked at also understanding the nature of these SPAC transactions and the importance of the pipe that is typically a companion to a SPAC merger, which is really important. It really speaks to the market validation of the business and the business model and the underlying investment thesis, and kind of tees you up for the right kind of long-term shareholder base. recognizing the importance of the PIPE transaction, I also wanted to secure commitments from my existing strategic investors or new investors to the PIPE so that for a SPAC, a prospective SPAC partner, looking at us, they would see super compelling business that's high growth, that's profitable, that is administratively ready to go and actually has the support from an existing group of shareholders to participate in the PIPE. I felt like that would position us as being an incredibly compelling and attractive target. Then I went and engaged a collection of advisors. I talked to a number of them, ran a bit of a process, and ultimately decided to get two co-advisors, JP Morgan and LionTree. With JP Morgan, we got the depth and strength of their team across all the key disciplines, from M&A to their equity capital market strength, as we would look to move through marketing the PIPE and the de-SPAC exercise. And with LionTree, we got very deep industry-specific experience in and around gaming, which was incredibly helpful in just guiding us through the whole process. So they were super helpful in the M&A process, teamed up also throughout the raising of the PIPE and now as we move through the de-SPACing process. So really great advisors to help us then manage qualifying and reaching out to prospective SPAC partners. And then we ran a process and we ended up in a place where we had, you know, a collection of prospective partners that we felt really great about in multiple term sheets, and ultimately started to work towards optimizing for one. You know, fairly late in the cycle, there was a SPAC, Acquies, which is the one we've ultimately partnered with. They came public in November, and we were fairly deep into our cycle and exercise. And it was founded by Jim Urin, the gentleman that I alluded to. It was formerly the chairman and CEO of MGM, and then his two co-founders, Dan Fetters and Edward King, and their 20-plus year careers in both their cases with Morgan Stanley, both covering gaming and the M&A space. And so, you know, I felt like these are people that I have history with, that I know. And we decided to let them come into the exercise fairly late, but they got really aggressive. And because they were so familiar with the company, they were able to really rationalize for themselves what really would make for the right outcome for them. And for us, in balance, we felt like that was the right and best outcome for the company. So that's how it is that we ultimately partnered with Acquies. We feel really great about the size of their SPAC, and you know, they were certainly critical to our then moving through the next stage of the process with our raising the PIPE, which was, we achieved a great outcome. Originally, we're going to do a $200 million PIPE, and we ended up sizing it up to 250 and have a really great collection of investors, very excited about. And so we ran that process. And of course, now we're deep into the mechanics of, we just recently filed our S-4 and waiting for the SEC to respond with their comments. In the meantime, doing all that we can to educate the marketplace about our company and evangelize kind of who we are and why we think we're so uniquely positioned. We are not, you know, your typical game company. We are a company that has this really unique platform upon which we've published our own games, kind of prove out its value. Now we're going to exploit it as we go and look to accelerate our growth through M&A. And then there's the longer term vision to open that platform up and provide loyalty as a service to other game makers and really create this ecosystem where with far less intervention or little to no intervention on our part, enable other game makers to adopt loyalty mechanics and features into their games and allow for this expanding universe of reward partners to enrich the real world benefits that players of these games can then take advantage of and enjoy. So that's why, you know, we're excited about the SPAC as a transaction, feel great about where we are as we move through the cycle of the transaction. So it's it feels like it's been so far the right path for us to have taken.
And once you close the transaction, as you alluded to, there's the PIPE, there's also cash from the SPAC's balance sheet. So PLAYSTUDIOS is going to have a significant cash balance once this closes. What are some of the use of proceeds and key growth initiatives as you talk about the future of the company?
Well, yeah, I mean, as I just alluded to, the reason for doing the SPAC transaction becoming public is to re-enable our inorganic growth through mergers and acquisitions. We have all the resources that we need in order to drive and execute on our organic strategy and plan, which is really what's reflected in the materials that we've published. There's nothing in that plan that really speaks to accelerating our growth through our M&A efforts or the longer-term opportunity and optionality we have as we open the platform up and provide loyalty as a service. So, you know, the proceeds are really going to be focused on the executing on an M&A strategy that will really allow us to more quickly expand our portfolio of products and start to introduce the loyalty proposition in and across a broader range of genres.
And now a word from our sponsor, Accelerate, one of Canada's most innovative and fastest growing alternative investment solution providers. With a suite of institutional caliber alternative ETFs for investors seeking diversification and long-term performance. The Accelerate One Choice Alternative Portfolio ETF, symbol 1C, ONEC on the TSX, is Canada's first alternatives portfolio solution, providing exposure to 6 alternative asset classes, 10 alternative strategies in one easy-to-use, one-choice ETF that charges a management fee of just 0.2%. The Accelerate One Choice Alternative Portfolio ETF trades under the symbol 1C, ONEC on the Toronto Stock Exchange. Find out more at accelerateshares.com.
And as you go through this going public transaction, you mentioned the key of telling your story are, you know, the forecasts, the growth opportunities, M&A, things of that nature. And then, you know, the overall theme of online gaming, social gaming, mobile gaming. But for investors new to the Play Studios story, how would you summarize the investment case for the stock?
Yeah, I mean, if you just look at what we have forecasted to achieve up and through 2022, and you just look at our opportunity on a normalized basis, you know, there's a very compelling entry point for investors. You know, they're investing in a company that, you know, to look at again to 2022 is 2.5 times revenue, where our peers are at 5.5 to 6 times, and from an EBITDA perspective, you know, we're 12 times our 2022 EBITDA, where the market's at 15.5 to 16 in terms of our diversified peers. And on a normalized margin basis, we're sub 10 times. So I think that just fundamentally, and mind you, that's based upon a performance for our business and a growth profile of our business that only takes into account our organic execution. It does not take into account the inorganic opportunities that we know we have and that we're going to go act on. So fundamentally, I think it's just an entry point at a pretty deep discount to where we ultimately will trade as we execute and continue to prove out this model.
So certainly I encourage investors to check out the filings. You mentioned recently announced filing that's awaiting SEC approval. Check out the investor presentations, compelling valuation, and as you indicated. So prior to wrapping things up, where can investors and even, you know, potential customers find out more about Play Studios?
Yeah, I would point everybody to playstudios.com. I think you can get a sense for the company and our products and the services that we've invested in and that we've built as a business. And then there's also an investor section where you can go. And we have on our website links to the presentation materials that really clearly lay out the context for the business and our thesis and ultimately the go-forward value creation opportunity. So I would point you to the investor section at playstudios.com.
Okay, great. So to summarize, the going public transaction is expected to close in the second quarter. And once closed, the symbol will be MYPS. So looking forward to that. Wish you the best of luck as a newly minted public company. We'll be rooting for you from the sidelines as shareholders. So thank you for all your hard work and thank you for coming on the podcast and sharing your story today. Super exciting stuff.
Thank you, Julian, Michael. Really, it's been a pleasure. Appreciate your taking the interest.
All right. Cheers.
Thanks for tuning in to the Absolute Return Podcast. This episode was brought to you by Accelerate Financial Technologies. Accelerate, because performance matters. Find out more at accelerateshares.com. The views expressed in this podcast are the personal views of the participants and do not reflect the views of Accelerate. No aspect of this podcast constitutes investment, legal, or tax advice. Opinions expressed in this podcast should not be viewed as a recommendation or solicitation of an offer to buy or sell any securities or investment strategies. The information and opinions in this podcast are based on current market conditions and may fluctuate and change in the future. No representation or warranty, expressed or implied, is made on behalf of Accelerate as to the accuracy or completeness of the information contained in this podcast. Accelerate does not accept any liability for any direct, indirect, or consequential loss or damage suffered by any person as a result of relying on all or any part of this podcast, and any liability is expressly disclaimed.